Welcome to the brightest audience in the nation to the Bob Enyart Live February Telethon. During our telethon this month, we're offering a free gift, Bob's video series, Having a Great Prayer Life, when you become a new subscriber to any of our monthly subscriptions. Our newest product, our monthly sermon audios on standard compact disc, allows you to listen to the sermon on any CD player, including the one in your car. You can also get the monthly sermons on MP3 CD, or you can get the video version of the monthly sermon videos on DVD. Bob's monthly Bible studies are now available on DVD or MP3 CD. These are great for starting your own family Bible study or a neighborhood Bible study. And Bob's monthly topical videos give you a new topical video each month, and with the best of Bob, you can get the best 8 Bob Enyart Live shows every month. By becoming a new subscriber to any of Bob's monthly products, making a new monthly donation of $20 or more, or a one-time donation of $50, you'll receive the video series, Having a Great Prayer Life, free of charge, special this month for the Bob Enyart Live February Telethon.
One morning, there's truth overhead. It gets beyond all the headlines you read. Don't need lip service with a wink and
greetings to the brightest audience in the nation. I am not Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church, and known affectionately in some circles as America's most popular self-proclaimed right-wing religious fanatic homophobic anti-choice talk show host. I'm Doug McBurney, member of Denver Bible Church, and host of the Weekly Worldview over at theweeklyworldview.com, the most important podcast in the history of such things. You can feel free to go check that out. Bob Enyart is not in the studio today, ladies and gentlemen. I'm here all alone, except for my trusty co-pilot, Russ, who's, you're doing a great job behind the glass. I think that's what hosts are supposed to say, because you hold in your hand the potential to embarrass me at any given moment. That's Russ. Russ is manning the phones, by the way. Should I ask for callers? I don't need any callers. I tell you what, folks. You sit back and take it easy. If you're driving, just take it easy. You don't have to come up with any material. I've got more than enough right here in my stack to get the job done. And I'm a licensed professional. I mean, not in radio. Actually, I'm not licensed in... I am licensed to drive, so I suppose I could say I'm a licensed professional. I do have a license, and I do get paid to do things from time to time. But I'm so glad and honored that Bob would give me the opportunity to join you today. And I want to start out with a couple of pieces of good news. That's something we don't get all that often, is good news. So put down the phone. Don't think about dialing in. Take it easy. Relax. Everything's under control. Got a story here from Sky News. I think that's over in London. And apparently, some scientists there have found what they think might be the world's oldest plant ever to be regrown. They found some seeds in the permafrost there. Let's see. The seeds are called the Silene stenophylla, and they've become the oldest plant ever to be regrown. And the plant is fertile, and it's producing flowers and viable seeds. And Sky News tells us that the seeds raise hope that iconic Ice Age mammals like the woolly mammoth could also eventually be resurrected. Scientists from the Institute of Cell Biophysics of the Russian Academy of Sciences said the revived plant looks very similar to modern versions. And they're estimating this these seeds that they found in the permafrost, they're estimating these seeds to be 30,000 years old. Not exactly sure how they come to that particular number, but it's just really nifty, neato stuff. Maybe we'll find the DNA of a woolly mammoth and we'll be able to bring the woolly mammoths back. And that'd be great. They could join the circus. What do you do with a woolly mammoth? I mean, what are they really good for? We don't really need them for agricultural work anymore. But on that same note, ladies and gentlemen, let's go to the first century. That's right. Hop with me into the Wayback Machine. This is according to WorldNet Daily. A New Testament professor is setting the world of Bible scholarship on fire with his claim that newly discovered fragments of early Christian writings could include a first century version of the Gospel of Mark. That's right. fragments of the gospel from the same century in which Jesus and the apostles lived. Now, this fellow's name is Daniel Wallace from the Dallas Theological Seminary, and he made the announcement during a February debate at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I have great memories of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. That's where I attended a filming of Bill Maher's television show. What was it called back then? That was a long time ago. Politically Incorrect. Yeah, me and Bill and a couple other folks there on the stage in front of a live auditorium full of college kids. It was a really interesting time. Wouldn't trade it for the world. I was paid for that appearance, as a matter of fact, which confirms the fact that I am a professional. Now, let's get back here to the story. So there was a debate at the North Carolina Chapel Hill, the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, and they were debating whether we have the wording of the original New Testament today. And here's what Daniel Wallace says. He says, if this fragment of the Gospel of Mark is confirmed to be from the first century, what a thrill it will be to have a manuscript that is dated within the lifetime of many of the original followers of Jesus. Not only this, but the manuscript would have been written before the New Testament was even completed. Now, experts are expecting further details to be published in about a year. And according to WorldNet Daily, we have as many as 18 New Testament manuscripts, all fragmentary, more or less, from the second century, and one from the first. Altogether, more than 40% of all New Testament verses are found in these first and second century manuscripts. But the most interesting thing is this first century fragment. Mr. Wallace says it was dated by one of the world's leading paleographers, and he said he was certain it was from the first century. And if this is true, it would be the oldest fragment of the New Testament known to exist. The oldest manuscript of the New Testament, as of right now, is from John's Gospel, and it's been dated to the first half of the second century. This would take us even closer to the original autographs. If authenticity and early date are confirmed, this fragment of the Gospel of Mark would be very significant and show how well-preserved the text of the New Testament really is. I only bring that story up because, well, it's really neat, really cool stuff. But I had a debate recently with I don't know what he is. He's kind of a pantheist or a whatever theist. He just believes there is some God. He's trying to do his best not to offend him. And he questioned the authenticity of the Gospels because he said, you know, we have these books that were written decades or centuries after the events. So how can we really know if what we have now is true? And so I sent him a list of about 30,000 pieces of evidence that point to the authenticity of the gospel, and that wasn't good enough for him. Now, for me, once you get past like three, I can be convinced. But with this fella, I sent him 36,000 pieces of evidence, and that just wasn't good enough for him. Anyway, some people are just willfully ignorant. Hey, it's Telethon month. Have we reminded people? Incessantly, we've reminded you that it is Bob Inyart Live's February Telethon to keep Bob Inyart Live on the internet for another year. We need 30 grand, ladies and gentlemen. And we have plateaued at the $11,187. Now, let me just go to yesterday's total. Yesterday's total was 11,162. Today is 11,187. That's $25 a day. Let me think. Can we do the math on this? At this rate, we'll be doing this until October of 2019 before we raise the 30 grand. You know, you people, you can't just sit back there and suck up all this good theological, biblical information without giving back, all right? Don't leave us hanging here, because we reach a worldwide audience here at Bob Inyart Live, and it's critical that this information go out to the ends of the earth, frankly. And so we need your help. If you can write a check for $50, $100, $1,000, and if you can just button up the 28,000 and change that we're short here, is it 28,000? I've never been very good at math. 12, we need 18,000, a mere 18,000 That's all. See, that's why I'm bad in negotiations. I make $10,000 errors when I'm trying to do math in my head. And that can get you into a lot of trouble when you're in a high-stakes negotiation. I mean, I'm no Donald Trump. All right, we're going to get to some Donald Trump, too. But as I sat down here in the studio, I noticed that the knives are out for Rick Santorum. That's right. The knives are out. Matt Drudge, who, as far as I can tell, has become an acolyte of Mitt Romney, as best I can tell. And it's probably because, well, I'm not going to say that, because I got nothing personal against Matt. But he has worked earnestly to destroy any candidate that has posed a threat to Mitt Romney. And as we go to air today, he's got a big headline on his website. Let me go back there real quick. Matt's got the big headline about Santorum's Satan warning. Right? And you click it, and the very first line that you read in Matt Drudge's write-up, it says, Satan has his sights on the United States of America, Republican presidential hopeful Rick Santorum has declared. You know, as if it happened this afternoon. And then Drudge goes on. He says, the former senator from Pennsylvania warned in 2008 how politics and government are falling to Satan. Now, here's what Rick Santorum had to say. And I was actually discussing the fact that the knives are out for Mr. Santorum with Bob Enyart before I went on the air today. And I had been of the opinion that the heathens and the leftists and the socialists, they really just can't help themselves. If they think someone is a Christian, or if they think someone even thinks themselves as a Christian or portrays themselves as a Christian in the world of politics or entertainment, well, they immediately attack viciously and nonstop, and they just can't help themselves because they've got this deep-seated hatred against all that is good and right in the world. But Bob posited another theory, that it's not just about the fact that they just can't help themselves because they're leftist, liberal, God-hating heathens. But it could very well be that they're actually afraid that Rick Santorum could gain the nomination. And not even Rick Santorum by name. The left is afraid that a conservative will win the nomination and go up against Barry. And then Barry could be in trouble if a real conservative goes up against him. Now, if they get Mitt Romney like they've always wanted, I mean, the left has wanted Mitt Romney ever since they captured him. I believe he was on some kind of pod from another planet and he was somehow jettisoned off of a ship into the Democratic National Headquarters, where he was built and programmed and sent out as a Republican. That's my theory about Mitt Romney. His upper torso could crack open and an alien figure could just start coming out and spraying that green slime. That could happen at any moment with Mitt Romney. But let's listen to what Santorum has to say in his radically religious rant, at least as far as Matt Drudge is concerned. Here's what Rick Santorum said back in 2008, a speech he gave at Ave Maria University. Ave Maria, that sounds like a Catholic university. I don't know, but I'm just going to take a shot in the dark. I think it's probably a religious institution, which might give an inkling as to why Mr. Santorum chose to speak on religious topics. But all that aside, Rick says, quote, Satan is attacking the great institutions of America, using those great vices of pride, vanity, and sensuality as the root to attack all of the strong plants that have so deeply rooted in the American tradition. Rick says, this is a spiritual war, and the father of lies has his sights on what you would think the father of lies would have his sights on, the good, decent, powerful, influential country, the United States of America. If you were Satan, said Rick Santorum, who would you attack in this day and age? He attacks all of us, and he attacks all of our institutions. Yeah. So does anyone disagree with anything Rick just said? I'm just going through it again real quickly. I don't disagree with a single word that Rick said. Yeah. But the knives are out, and Matt Drudge has joined with Mitt Romney and the other forces of darkness against anyone who they perceive as a conservative. And, well, you know, I said on my broadcast this past week, and you can feel free to go download it at theweeklyworldview.com. It's also available on iTunes. You can subscribe right there. You know, all of you heathens who make fun of and you laugh at the conservatives and the religious people and the Christians, when the perilous times come, you'll claw all over one another. You'll knock each other over to get yourselves behind a man from the right, like Rick Santorum, like so many other Christian leaders before him, Christian politicians, I should say, before him. I think it'll be similar to the story of England and their relationship that they had. It was an on-again, off-again relationship they had with Winston Churchill. When he was out of favor, he was mocked, ridiculed, laughed at, called crazy, and called extreme. And when the bomb started to drop, the leftist liberal politicians in England could not install him in office fast enough because they were too scared and not man enough to get the job done. So they had to find a man on the right. So all of you politicians or people who are considering getting into politics, put God first. Put him right out there in front because it intimidates these leftists. I mean, they mock him and laugh and they say God doesn't matter and they say God isn't real. But deep down in their black little hearts, not only do they know he's real, but they're intimidated by him. And when push comes to shove and it's nutcracking time, they'll line up behind a man who has taken a stand on faith and who has announced that he's not ashamed of the Creator or the gospel of peace or the Savior, Jesus Christ. So let's not falter. Let's not back up. Let's not be ashamed of Christ who purchased us with his very blood. You think he doesn't have the power to overcome these chumps? Come on. All right. Now I've done that. That was the good news. Well, I guess that wasn't good news. The Gospel of Mark, that's good news by definition, right? The fruit seeds that have come back to life from the permafrost, that's all interesting stuff. But let's focus on the state of the culture for just a moment, ladies and gentlemen. I've got a story from NBC in Philadelphia. Very disturbing. Police are investigating the discovery of a fetus inside a sewer pipe at a Kensington, Pennsylvania home. Contractors were working on a clogged toilet in the basement when they found what appeared to be a human fetus in the sewer pipe. They say it appeared to be 3 to 4 months old. What bothered me about this story is that the chief inspector for the Philadelphia police, he said at this point, it appears someone might have had a miscarriage. This may not be a crime scene. I just don't like that presumption. I mean, when a human body is found, doesn't it make sense to at least presume that perhaps a crime has occurred? I mean, until all the facts are in, I think we have to make a presumption that perhaps a crime has occurred. But the conscience of our nation and our police has become so calloused when it comes to fetal life that the default position of the Philadelphia police is at this point, well, we don't know if it might not, we don't know that this is a crime scene. This may not be a crime scene. For all we know, someone might have had a miscarriage. And while certainly we don't have all the facts, ladies and gentlemen, I just don't like the presumption on the part of this here police investigator. I'm not happy about that. I don't think it bodes well for the state of the conscience of the men in blue, at least there in Philadelphia. All right. Let's go to the Southern Baptists. Or should we just say Baptists? Well, they're going to vote on that. Yeah, Newsmax is reporting that the nation's largest Protestant denomination will remain Baptist, but they're thinking about whether or not to drop Southern from the Southern Baptist moniker. Yeah, they may not be Southern Baptists anymore. There's a task force there amongst the Baptists studying whether the denomination should change its name. Some feel that the name could be considered too regional. Too regional. Yeah, Southern Baptist and all. You know, like Southwest Airlines. Just a little too regional. Others outside of church leadership say that the name has become a liability because it is too often associated with divisive partisan politics. So what the leftists are saying here is that the term Southern Baptist is simply, it's too associated with conservatism. And if the Baptists really want to be a part of the progress of civilization, that they need to drop the whole Southern Baptist moniker. Well, the good news is that it's nice to see that the Baptists are voting on something that's not an affront and an offense to the living God. Because, you know, every year they vote on whether homosexuals should be able to get married or even preach from the pulpit. So I guess it's encouraging that they're at least voting on something that's not going to get them into trouble with God.
What is the gravest threat to today's black families? This is Ron Fox, pastor of Berean Bible Church, and I invite you to come out on Saturday, February 25th at 3 p.m. We will be showing a free, powerful documentary, Ma'afa 21. Berean Bible Church is located at 1400 Birch Street in Denver. For more information, give us a call at 303-329-0409.
Definitely got to go see Ma'afa 21. Yeah, we had down at Pastor Fox's church. That's a brave man showing the truth about the foundation of Planned Parenthood. Their Negro project, Margaret Sanger, said she wanted to basically eliminate the undesirables. And folks like Pastor Fox and other people in his church were considered the undesirables. So if you haven't had an opportunity to see it, ladies and gentlemen, join Pastor Fox and witness a seminal work, one of the seminal works of our time, exposing the truth behind Planned Parenthood and their plot to kill black people, which has been extremely successful, by the way. Their plot has. Their plot's been extremely successful. Why? Because mostly because white liberals have funded it. And they claim they like black people so much that they fund an organization that kills more black people, probably has killed more black people than slavery ever did. And that's Planned Parenthood. So be sure to go check that out. All right. I got some political news. I've been saving this up because this generally is not a very political show. I mean, not overtly Republican or Democrat. And, you know, Bob focuses on bigger issues like the state of the culture and saving souls. But I want to talk a little bit about the election. Mitt Romney's in trouble. And I want to thank everyone in Colorado, by the way, for helping achieve that. But there's a new story today in the Washington Times that's got me positively giddy. Because this election for me has not been so much about electing Rick Santorum or Newt Gingrich or Herman Cain or... Is there anyone I missed? Donald Trump certainly hasn't been about... Who's the lady with the Minnesota accent who was so great? Bachman, Michelle Bachman. It's never been about Bachman. Is there anyone else I missed? There was another Mormon, right? There was another Mormon guy. Anyway, it's never been about any of those people. I can't even remember half their names. What this election has been about for me, first of all, of course, is personhood in Colorado, which we're gearing up for filing. From what I understand, the leadership of the personhood movement in Colorado is filing motions, perhaps as we speak. Is that why Bob got the bat signal this morning to go down to the Capitol? No, Bob got the bat signal for another. Is it a secret? Oh, he's testifying on the new fetal homicide bill, a proposed law to protect unborn life in the womb. Bob got the bat signal this morning, and that's why I'm sitting in the host chair today. And he's down at the Capitol right now testifying. And we should all be praying for that effort because Bob is working to pull these politicians to the right and try to teach them the definition of what it means to be pro-life. So we want to pray for that effort, and we want to thank Bob and Leslie Hanks and the folks from Colorado Right to Life for going down there and standing up for the rights of all innocent persons. But let's talk about Mitt Romney, who is the antithesis of everything I just said. New story from Washington Times. Mitt Romney's second go-round at the presidential run is not going so well. So right there, I thought, okay, I got to do this. So here's what the Washington Times says. 9 states have voted so far, and in six of them, the former Massachusetts governor has lost supporters who voted for him in 2008. He's won fewer votes in each of those states than he did last time. And again, I think we've got Bob Enyart to thank for that, at least in part. Bob Enyart and a cohort of other brave, fearless conservatives, Greg Jackson, Steve Dace, and there are others. There's a long list. I don't know them all by name. But they have been driving nails into the coffin of the political career of Mitt Romney for the better part of 5 years, and we all really appreciate it. It looks like all your work has paid off, although we can't give up. Because as Greg Jackson says, zombies never die. You just got to keep pounding that stake home every single day until that monster is dead. And by the grace of God, that monster will die. Its long-deserved death in the state of Michigan next Tuesday. We can all hope that that happens. So if Romney loses Michigan, it's time for Romney to go home to Massachusetts or Rhode Island or Vermont. Where is he from? Maine? I think he was born in Michigan. So if he loses Michigan, it's got to be pretty much over. And then who's in line? There's only one politician who hasn't risen up in the primaries, and that's Ron Paul. He's never broken... You know, he hasn't won a single caucus. He hasn't won a single primary. And let me tell you why. Ron Paul, this is a story from CNS News. Ron Paul told Candy Crowley on CNN last Sunday that social conservatism is a losing position for the Republican Party. Candy asked Mr. Paul, she said, "Are you uncomfortable with all this talk about social issues?" She asked him in between donuts. And Mr. Paul said, no, I think it's a losing proposition. I mean, I talk about it because I have a precise understanding of how difficult problems are to be solved. And they're not likely to be at the national level. We're not supposed to nationalize these problems. The founders were very clear that problems like this, if there needs to be legislation of sorts, the state has the right. The state has the right to write the legislation that they choose. And that solves a lot of our problems. That was pretty terrible. I apologize for that. Anyway, there's proof that Ron Paul is no conservative. Now, the article goes on, the CNS article goes on to state that back on December 19th, Paul signed the Personhood Pledge, published by Personhood USA. The pledge states in part, "I stand with Ronald Reagan supporting the unalienable personhood of every American. From the moment of conception until natural death, I support a human life amendment to the Constitution and endorse legislation to make clear that the 14th Amendment protections apply to the unborn." However, when Mr. Paul signed that pledge, CNS tells us, he also put up an addendum arguing that the federal government should not interfere with the states in passing laws on abortion. That's Ron Paul's position, is that the federal government shouldn't interfere with the states passing laws about abortion, and we got to stop all these endless wars. Anyway, my question to you, Mr. Paul, would be, yeah, for or against abortion? Are you okay with the states passing laws for or against abortion, or are you really deep in your black little heart for them either way?
Children are a blessing from God. But when parents reject and ignore his wisdom and teaching about parenting, children can grow up to be a curse to their parents and to the world around them. What does the Bible say about parents and children, education, and child discipline? Pastor Bob Enyart covers this powerful and critical topic in his teaching series, Raising Godly Children. Order by calling 800-8-ENYART or online at kgovstore.com.